Good afternoon. I'd like to call a meeting of the House Resources Committee to order 1 p.m. We're in room 124. Today is Friday, March 25th, 2016, and our members present today are Representative Herron, Representative Josephson, Representative Johnson, Representative Seaton, Representative Tarr, Representative Olson, our co-chair, Representative Nagiak, and Representative Hawker are all excused today, as well as our alternate, Representative Chenault. And I am co-chair Representative Tallarico, so I'd let the record reflect that we have a quorum today to conduct business. I also want to recognize our staff today. Our secretary is Julie Kohler over here, and teleconference specialist is Ben. Thank you, Ben, for being here today. And committee aide today is Joshua Banks from my office. Joshua's right up here in the corner. I'd like to remind everyone to please turn off or silence your cell phones. And today the committee is going to take up House Bill 213, and we actually have a committee substitute brought to us by our sponsor. So I was wondering, Representative Herron, could you make a motion for us, please?
Could I have an at ease to get a copy of that?
Yeah, we'll take a brief at ease. Okay, we're back on record. Representative Herron.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the House Resources Committee adopt CS for House Bill 213, Work Draft 29 LS0710 /echo.
I'll object for purposes of discussion, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. So is there any, we were just going to adopt this as a working draft, then bring the sponsor up, but would you prefer
I'd like to see the summary of the changes. I think
okay, all right, very good.
The difference between the two bills, I study one and
good. Well, I will
the changes before I adopt it.
I will invite the sponsor and her staff to come forward and speak to us about that.
Good afternoon, committee members and Chair Tallarico. My name is Kathy Tilton. I represent House District 12, which is the Chugiak and the Mat-Su, and I appreciate your being here to hear HB 213 today. Would you just like to hear the changes, or would you like to hear a little introduction of the bill overall?
Mr. Chairman, I'm just interested in what's different from the bill that I looked at before.
That you looked at before.
I saw E in this one, so you know, I don't see a lot of problem with either way, whatever mm-hmm. is the will of the chair.
You know, maybe if you could run through what the bill does and then give us a summary of those changes you made, that would be great. And then we'll have that all taken care of.
Thank you, Chair Tallarico. HB 213 is access to land to our state lands is a fundamental precept of our state constitution. It's clearly expressed in Article 8, Sections 2 through 4. Perhaps the most relevant to this bill before you is Section 4, which states, fish, forest, wildlife, grasslands, and all other replenishable resources belonging to the state shall be utilized, developed, and maintained on the sustained yield principle, subject to preferences among beneficial uses. Members of the committee, this has been a tremendous week for Alaskans with the affirmation that we have the right to access our lands. First, the Supreme Court of the United States unanimously agreed with John Sturgeon's interpretation of ANILCA, and only 2 days ago, your own bill, Mr. Chairman, HB 216, passed the House unanimously as well. While not as broad as HB 216, HB 213 is another bill intended to affirm and clarify Alaskans' right to access Alaskans' public land through traditional means. For nearly a decade, user groups have been in disagreement with the Department of Natural Resources over the management of the Rex Trail, up to and including a lawsuit that ultimately was decided by the Supreme Court. HB 213 was drafted to be specifically responsive to the points of law ruled in that case, which you have a copy in your packets. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, it is clearly the court's responsibility to interpret Alaska statute, but it is our right, responsibility, and privilege to change the law when we observe it being used in a way that the legislature did not originally intend or envision. So plainly stated, HB 214 requires the Commissioner of Natural Resources to provide detailed written findings addressing specific points when restricting or prohibiting traditional means of access to state lands. And it further requires the Department of Natural Resources to provide adequate public notice when such restrictions or expectations are adopted. So my staff here, Mr. Hilliard, is prepared to tell you the changes in the bill.
Representative Joseph.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, Representative Tilton, didn't you omit one key part of this bill? At page 2 of version E, where there's an and clause, it's subsection C dot II or C2, which seems to say, Commissioner, if you're going to block entrance along a right-of-way because your men or women find a safety consideration, you had better find another means of access. That's sort of how I read that. It's sort of like, this access will happen, period. Am I wrong?
I defer that to
For the record, Mr. Chairman, Heath Hilliard, staff to Representative Tilton. Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I believe that your interpretation of that particular provision is correct, that II, a reasonable alternative for the traditional means of access across the land, water, or land and water for traditional outdoor activities on other land, water, or land is available and approved by the commissioner. Correct. So I believe that your essential interpretation of that provision is correct.
Representative Josephson.
Shouldn't this, if I'm correct, shouldn't this have something other than a zero fiscal note? Because we're going to have to build a lot of trails.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, that we have the fiscal note was prepared for us by the Department of Natural Resources. So all I can say is apparently at this juncture, they appear to not believe that there needs to be a fiscal note with a dollar appropriation.
Thank you. And we do have, for the committee's reference, we do have Deputy Commissioner Fogles online for questions. I think maybe if we present that question to Commissioner Fogles, he might be able to give us a broader explanation of that or the potential that, at least where I live, they don't necessarily build you the trail, but they do give you the alternate route. Representative Josephson, would you like Commissioner Fogles maybe to address that?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Deputy Commissioner Fogles, the way I see this bill is it's pretty clearly designed to remove some power from DNR, which it's had for a long time, and give it to the legislature. My first question, however, is do you agree that why did your department conclude there was a zero fiscal note?
Representative Josephson, through the chair, this is Ed Fogles, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. Good afternoon, and thanks for allowing me to join your hearing. Well, we did not interpret this section to say that we had to build new trails. We interpreted this as saying that we couldn't restrict for aesthetic values unless unless some conditions were met, or one was that there was alternative access already there. But we don't see a fiscal impact to DNR on this because we typically don't restrict access for aesthetic values in any case, so on general state lands.
Can I follow up?
Follow up, please.
What if this was sort of like a cavern or a deep valley? This subsection C2 beginning line 12 through line 15, and then sort of repeated in line 16 through 19. The way I read it and the way the presenters read it, you have to have, the department has to participate in making another reasonable alternative available. And, we've seen what, we know in 1804 what Lewis and Clark accomplished. I mean, there are ways to get from the east to the west across the Rocky Mountains if you're persistent. But what do you think that means?
Representative Josephson, through the chair, again, to me, that to the department, that means that, you know, if we're embarking on restricting access, traditional means of access for aesthetic values, then, we have to make sure that there will be alternative access available before we do that restriction. If there isn't, then we may be restricted from, we may be prohibited under the statute from doing that restriction. But we certainly are not in a position to go building new trails just like that without a capital appropriation from the legislature or some specific funding source.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Jones.
Representative Herring.
Yes, Commissioner, is the fiscal note that is before us, is it on the the whiskey version, or is it on the Echo version?
Representative Herring, through the chair, I believe it's on the whiskey version, but I'm not sure it really makes any difference, because our fundamental assumption here is that the bill restricts us from restricting traditional means of access for protecting aesthetic values, and we don't normally do that on general state land, and if we did, we certainly would seek public involvement and do some kind of finding anyway. So I don't know that I don't believe that the Echo version has really changed our fiscal note at all.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you for Mr. Fogles.
Please.
I'm reading this, and on page 2, line 1, it's the commissioner makes specific detailed written findings. And then under C, it's necessary for the protection of public safety and or private property, and then affects the means of transportation. So do you have full legal authority to restrict access for the protection of public safety and or public or private property exclusive of this bill or exclusive of this segment of statute?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, yes, I believe so. This bill restricts our ability to restrict access for aesthetic values, to protect aesthetic values. So if there was a trail out there where we thought that there would be public safety concerns, that would be separate from this. That would not be covered by this bill in our interpretation.
Follow up. So in the legal case and all that we're talking about on the Rex Trail, that was not considered for aesthetic values, that was for public safety values, determined by the court. So then you have perfect authority to restrict access to the Rex Trail, which is really the identified purpose of this bill, or one of the specific causes for this bill. And am I correct that you still could close off that access to that trail, whether this bill is in place or not?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, yes, that's our interpretation, is that we would be able to manage access on a trail such as the Rex if we felt there was a public safety concern. If this bill were to pass, because this bill to us only restricts us from restricting access for protecting aesthetic values.
And just one follow-up. So what is the distinction? Do you have to make a different finding if it's for you're restricting access for aesthetic values and safety issues? Do you have to make those in different detailed findings, or can it be one finding including both issues?
Well, Representative Seaton, through the chair, I guess if we were, as we did for the RACs, we did public outreach and public notice before proposing a management regime for the RACs. So, and there were findings involved in that. The definition of aesthetic values in our Title 38, I can read that to the committee if you would like, but it's fairly specific, and you can see right away that it really is different than public safety or protection of resources. The committee like me to read the definition of aesthetic values?
If you would, please.
Okay. So this is in 3804200A or B1. Aesthetic values means those values that exist as an expression of the social or cultural viewpoint held by a portion of the population.
Uncomfortable silence. Anybody have a comment about that?
Sounds pretty broad to me.
Okay.
I'm just trying to figure
Representative Tarr, did you have a question?
I did, Mr. Chairman. And I wanted to just pass out some photos, if I could, because this will help set up the question, and there's one, maybe Josh can help with this. And this is directly for Mr. Fogels, and I'm sorry, Mr. Fogels, you won't see the photos. I actually, there's one for you guys as well. But I'm trying to understand, without the bill, if you're looking on page 2 in section 2 where we're adding language about operation of registered and unregistered all-terrain vehicles up to 10,000 pounds, I'm trying to understand without that language how you were defining all-terrain vehicles. And I'm passing out some photos. They're probably images you would be familiar with, but just doing like a Google search of, you know, moose buggies, and finding, you know, what vehicles would qualify because they wouldn't exceed the 10,000-pound limit. And the reading that article about the Rex Trail, it sounded like, you know, initially the reason some of these vehicles were limited was because they were causing a lot of damage because they're the size of the vehicles. So I'm just trying to understand. I mean, my concern would be these very large vehicles, and you know, it says in the article that they were causing some pretty deep ruts and sounded like some pretty significant damage. And one of the criticisms was that, you know, the trail repair work hadn't been done. Without this language, you know, it would just say, you know, using snow vehicles, operation of all-terrain vehicles, comma, horseback riding. And that would make me think of, you know, like four-wheelers or the four-wheeler with, you know, the pull-behind attachment if you're out hunting. But these photos I'm looking at, when you get up to like a 10,000-pound vehicle, I mean, these are much more like off-road vehicles with these gigantic tires. And I guess it just seems a little bit concerning because the kind of damage that these size vehicles could do is from these photos I'm looking at is pretty significant. So does that make sense? Could you explain without that up to 10,000 pounds how you would define all-terrain vehicles and how adding that will change that?
Representative Tarr, through the chair, I guess I would have to say that I'm not sure that I have the expertise in managing off-road vehicle use myself to answer that question for the committee, and I'd have to probably get back to the committee after discussing it with some of my staff that do this day-to-day, or have one of them come to the next hearing and kind of run through that for you.
Okay, and I'd appreciate that. Oh, sorry, pardon me, through the
follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And maybe I could just email these photos, and I apologize I didn't get a chance to talk to the sponsor beforehand to ask the same question, and that way I can just understand better sort of current status, how that's defined, and then new definition, and what that might mean, you know, in terms of what's allowed and how we could just have some level of comfort that we wouldn't be damaging salmon streams or, you know, that would be my concern, basically, you know, that there would be that type of damage. Thank you, Mr.
Representative
Chairman.
Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just for the sake of argument, I'm going to remove my objection to adopting the CS since we've been talking about it anyway, so I'll just go ahead and do that.
Thank you.
And secondly, as I just – Google's a wonderful thing, and I looked, and it looks like a Jeep CJ7, and that only weighs about 4,900 pounds. Mm-hmm. So you're talking a vehicle twice that size. So mm-hmm. The law right now is – This isn't even included, so it's a much bigger vehicle that they would be up to. So just a point of information.
Well, and, Mr. Chairman, if I could comment, thank you. That's why it's unclear to me how they're defining that now. There's no restriction right now. It just says all-terrain vehicle. But if they are sort of in practice using that to think of something much smaller, that would help me understand, you know, whether the 10,000-pound thing becomes an issue in the way that, you know, I'd be kind of worried, a little worried about.
Mr. Hilliard had a comment, and then we'll go to Representative Joseph.
Mr. Chair, I think that we have some people online for public testimony who are, mm-hmm. are members of the user groups okay. that had asked for mm-hmm. this 10,000-pound provision. I mm-hmm. believe that they're referring to larger snow track vehicles that mm-hmm. are going to be much heavier, mm-hmm. but they actually have a lower displacement in terms of the width of the track. So I believe there's Mr. Mel Grove online who could speak to some of this. So mm-hmm. however the committee wants to proceed, but I do believe we have people online that can address that point.
Thank you. Yeah, we'll make sure and get them in public comments. Representative Josephson.
Thank you. The more I look at the bill, I'm put at some ease that this is about aesthetics and the department doesn't sort of regulate a whole lot based on that. Mm-hmm. But following up on Representative Tarr's question, for the deputy commissioner, if we adopted the new definition of traditional means of access, then the starting point without any other emergency regulation or regulation for all of these RS-2477 trails would be 10,000 pounds. Am I right? In other words, the department would have to now intervene in the way it did on the Rex Trail multiples of times if it found that 10,000 pounds created four-foot ditches.
Representative Josephson, through the chair, let me clarify one thing for the committee. We have regulations that sort of specify what's generally allowed, what are generally allowed uses on state land. And let me just read to you right now what the regulations allow anywhere, regardless of what kind of trail or for what purposes. There are generally allowed uses, using a highway vehicle with a curb weight of up to 10,000 pounds, including a four-wheel drive vehicle and pickup truck, using a recreational-type vehicle, off-road or all-terrain vehicle with a curb weight of up to 1,500 pounds, including a snowmobile or other tracked vehicle, motorcycle, or ATV, on or off an established road easement. And it goes on, and we should probably provide the committee, I will provide the committee a copy of our generally allowed uses on state land fact sheet.
Follow up? Through the chair, I think we have that, and it's been included by the committee. But looking at the Kaywood decision, there's a more limiting regulation, 11 AAC 51100A, that applies to RS-2477 rights of way. And so my question to you, I know I asked it sort of fast, but it was about these 2477 rights of way, and I'm just wondering if we amended this statute, wouldn't you have to amend 11 AAC 51100A?
Representative Josephson, I'm not sure I'm in a position to be able to answer that with any level of certainty. But again, this statute really only applies to restricting uses for aesthetic values, which we typically don't really do on general state land anyway.
Can I follow up on just that last part?
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, the aesthetic statute is 3804-200. The change definition is 3805945. So it looks like it falls under a broader definition that's used for traditional. Oh, I'm sorry. Wait a minute. 384. Yeah. You're right. Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I'm trying to parse those two together because under 945, they're on page 3, subsection 7. We're talking about restriction or prohibition of traditional means of access. And that seems that's the new definition that we've got before us here in 200 is applied. It is applied throughout, I believe. Is that, Mr. Fogel's not the case on page 3, subsection 11, on 3805-945A, amended to read?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, I'm I mean, I'm looking at Section 3 on page 3, lines 17 through 20, the addition of the restriction or prohibition of a traditional means of access. I'm not sure what you mean by subsection 11.
If I said subsection 11, I didn't mean that. I said subsection 7 here is under 3805945A.
Right.
And it's referring back to the definition and changing the definition in 945 of the definition that is being changed for in 200B2.
Right. Representative Seaton through the chair. I mean, yeah, that...
So I guess what I'm trying to find out is changing this definition in 200, but then referring that change, having 945 be specific to utilizing that definition, doesn't that definition then apply throughout the sections as to what would be considered a traditional means of access, and therefore your current regs of 1,500 pounds would no longer apply in anything that deals with 3805945.
Well, Representative Seaton through the chair, yeah, I mean, Section 2 of the bill that amends the definition of traditional means of access, yeah, you're correct. I mean, that would amend that definition throughout Title 38. So, and I'm not sure that we've really, I don't think that we've determined that that's really going to impact our generally allowed uses statute or regulation. Although I'd probably have to get back to the committee on that. I don't think that's going to be a problem.
And, Mr. Chairman,
follow up.
Yeah, I'd appreciate that, because when we change the definition and it applies throughout 38, then all of a sudden that means that you may have regulations that have generally allowed uses, but if they would be lesser than registered or unregistered all-terrain vehicles up to 10,000 pounds, they're not going to be consistent with the statute after amended. So if you would get back to us on that, we'd appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Hilliard?
We will do that.
Mr. Chair, perhaps this piece of information will kind of illuminate the committee on this particular point. 200 deals with the specific and detailed written findings that the commissioner must issue in order to make such a closure, and 945 has to do with a public notice. And so 945 stipulates that if there is a closure pertaining to aesthetic values, that there has to be adequate public notice. And so that sections that item 7 is only adding that restriction pursuant to 3804-200 into the list of notices required. So the first section actually has to do with the substantive component of the detailed written findings that the commissioner must issue, and then 945 deals with the subsequent public notification.
Oh, okay.
That's my understanding.
Thank you.
So as I was reading it, it says basically we're adding this as this restriction or prohibition as a list of required public notices pursuant to, or how's the link, protecting aesthetic values of land and water under AS 3804-200. So, through the chair, Representative Seaton, I'm not saying you're incorrect, but I'm saying that they do deal with two fundamentally different portions of Title 38.
And, Mr. Chairman, just follow up. Since Ed Fogel's indicated it might apply all through Title 38, I just want to get that from the department officially, yeah, their designation.
I do appreciate identifying too. So Section 3 is specifically about public notice and not really about usage. It's pretty clear right at the beginning there, so it's about public notice. Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For Mr. Hilliard. However, 3805-945 notice is not, I thought you said it was about situations of aesthetic concern, and that isn't what it is. It's about any kind of notice, isn't it?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, my point was is that that new item 7 deals specifically and only with the aesthetic values. Lines 17 through 20 on page 3. So You're correct that 945 deals with all public notices, and 7 adds this restriction for aesthetic purposes.
Any other questions for the sponsor? Have we actually hit the summary of changes, Representative Johnson, or would you like to?
I'm clear on the bill now.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. Are there any other questions for the sponsor or her staff? Maybe I'll, if you can just, Representative Seaton.
I guess I do. I understand that someone was saying that a snow-go might be one of those articles, but I guess I want to find out whether a small Caterpillar tractor is also allowed under this bill. I mean, we have, just want to make sure, because we're talking about an issue that may or may not be at winter, it may or not be confined. I know that the idea is that this is access to state lands, but with the new definition of water of the state that we did, that's any pond that has water, or pond or an estuary or anything that has water in it any time of the year. And if we are getting into the aspect of saying that these, whether it's monster trucks or Caterpillar tractors, could utilize the waters of the state, then I think that we are, unless the commissioner goes in and makes a specific designation for a specific area, I think that we may be causing some harm that we are not aware of yet. So I'd like to really see the parameters of the bill and what it could affect.
That I see there's a lot of perplexed issues. There are very few track-type push dozers that we'll find that you can purchase that are less than 10,000 pounds. That, my personal experience there, 17 horsepower rubber tired tractor weighs somewhere between 7,600 and 9,400 pounds, and most of that yellow iron very easily cracks the 10th. In fact, a D3 I think weighs probably about 17,800 pounds. You really can't buy them too much smaller than that. Just for a
sure.
A lot of useless information I probably have in my head, but. At least for these purposes, those are pretty substantial. Normally, in particularly a push type dozer, they're all about the weight.
Mr. Chair, just to respond to that, and I'll have to talk to the department. But the key there with regard to the 10,000 pounds is it's preceded by all terrain vehicle. So I'm not familiar with what the definition is. So I'll work with the department so that I can inform the committee at the next hearing.
All right, that would be good. Thank you. Yeah. Any other questions for the sponsor at all? If you'd like to remain there, that would be just fine. Or any other anything that Deputy Commissioner Fogles can address right now? Representative Seaton.
Thank you. How often does the commissioner prohibit restrict usage for aesthetic reasons?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, I'm taking it that's a question for me. This is Ed Fogles. At this point, to my knowledge, outside of state park units, we don't really ever restrict, to my knowledge, traditional access for aesthetic values. It's always, if we do it, it's for public safety or resource damage reasons.
Yeah.
Follow up.
And back to my earlier question on a finding for those are generally not done in combination. It would just be a single finding for public safety or management reasons. Is that correct? It wouldn't include necessarily a determination of for aesthetic values.
Representative Seaton, through the chair, yes, that's correct. We would, if we had a situation where we thought there were public safety issues, we would just do a finding for that particular trail, as we did for the Rex, and explain our reasoning and what the problem is and what our proposed restriction would be, and then go out to public notice with that.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Fogles? Okay. We'll be moving to public testimony. If I could ask Representative Tarr, can you tell me where these photos are from?
I can, through Mr. Chairman, I could send the links. I just did a Google search because trying to figure out, you know, 10,000 pounds, what does that mean?
Yeah.
But I would, you know, do the appropriate thing, and I'll send it through the committee. And
okay. This one potentially could be the Rex Trail, but this one's highly unlikely to be the Rex. This actually looks like the Stampede Trail,
okay,
which is a trail that was established by the Alaska Road Commission in 1963, I think. And, they really put it in the wrong spot. not that I'm blaming the Alaska Road Commission, because I think they did it in the winter. When you do things in the winter, it's completely different than when you do them in the summer. So, but I'm guessing that's where that one's from. I think they're probably both from there. But anyway, thank you for that. So we're going to move to public testimony now, if we could, and I think we'll go to the Anchorage LIO first, and we have Warren Olson. Mr. Olson, if you're there, could you please give us your name, your affiliation, and 3 minutes of testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name's Warren Olson. Been here in Alaska since 1958. I'm talking for myself today. I've run track machines and vehicles over trails in Alaska for probably 50-plus years. And I think, just cutting to the chase, the phenomena of four-wheelers has expanded tremendously, as we all know. But there's equipment out there that we can get a lighter footprint. And the lighter footprint comes from what you call PSI, pounds per square inch. And you can run track vehicles up to 10,000 pounds that have a lighter footprint than, you know, a person that weighs 150 pounds. And I think that's where the state should go. I don't see the purpose people that have no interest in harvesting food or catching fish or traveling on these trails or bringing food to their table just to go out and rip up a trail. And that's a recent phenomena probably in the last 6 or 7 years that is becoming a huge problem. So I think there's an easy solution. I think we can go to rigs that have a PSI on them, namely track rigs. There's two or three things, too. We used to run trails that we could run in the wintertime or early spring, and in the late summer or fall, we'd be on another trail for the same location, but it'd be a summertime trail. So historically, the folks back then were running bulldozers and running very heavy equipment and so forth, but they really took care of the trails in those days. The problem in the Rex Trail, that was an absolute travesty to turn that trail down and then let it sit there for 4 or 5 years and be bannered back and forth and closed. So I think we're going to have to go to track rigs. And I think we should work harder on keeping more trails open, because what it does, it spreads people out. And when we start concentrating people on a few remaining trails, then we get into the conflicts of users, and we really get hammered with too many people on trails and so forth. And don't forget earthquakes, floods, beavers, and other things that wipe out trails constantly. Mother Nature does a pretty good job on redesigning these trails, and sometimes, you know, I always carry a chainsaw and a shovel and a couple of shovels and tools and so forth, and you end up making your own trails or fixing up your own way. The other thing is that when you got 10,000 caribou walking around, they do a tremendous amount of damage as well, and we follow those trails that the animals make, and I think with some common sense here, we can get through this thing. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Olson? Representative Tarr?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a question. It sounds like what you're talking about, you know, these other vehicles, the track vehicles, more like the, you know, extended belt type of vehicle so that it spreads out the overall, you know, PSI, you know, impact of that vehicle. And I'm just wondering if you're looking at the version of the bill that we're considering, it doesn't specify, you know, that they have to be that type of vehicle. It just says the pound limit. So the way I'm reading it, it means it could be, you know, the other type of vehicle with more like the off-road vehicle type of large tires. And would you, you know, sounds like from what you're saying, you know, you're offering support for something that's a little more well-defined. And I just want to make sure I'm understanding correctly, you know, you're saying we should be moving towards these low PSI type track vehicles. So that's why the pound limit isn't a concern?
Through the chair, yes. The phenomenon that we're seeing and advertised on TV and everything else, the purpose is to go out and tear up a trail. It's not to go out and use a trail to get from one point to another. But we can solve that problem. We got vehicles, and I see a picture right in front of you, and I think we have to go there. But I'll tell you another thing. Closing down a trail because of safety reasons, I've only seen, in 50 years, I've only seen maybe a trail. We had a landslide one time down along the railroad track at Chittenden. Yeah, that was a safety problem. We all had enough brains to stay off that slide.
Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Olson? Mr. Olson, thank you for your testimony. We appreciate it. And if we could go to the Matt Sue Legislative Information Office. Melvin Grove, Mr. Grove, could you identify yourself for the record and give us a three-minute testimony, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. My name is Melvin Grove. I live here in Wasilla area, and I'm representing the Alaska Outdoor Access Alliance. Excuse me. And the reason I'm involved in this organization and in this legislation is because of the Rex Trail and what happened on the Rex Trail. It was a travesty that occurred, and we've been using that trail since, well, probably the mid-90s, along with a lot of other Alaskans. And, you know, I'm going to say off first that, you know, access is a huge issue, and it's not just the Rex Trail. I mean, we as leaders in the state, we need to look at access and cherish that access, because it's the only way we can actually feed our families. We can make a living. Our state resources are critical. And, you know, on a hierarchy of needs, food and water, I mean, access is right there with it. We can't obtain any of those without access. And when we start restricting access, we're just going down a slippery slope, and as we've seen with, luckily, well, John Sturgeon's case, a tremendous victory for Alaskans, because that issue was about access. But, you know, this legislation, we have, you know, and it kind of bothers me that DNR thinks, well, this just is managing for aesthetic values. Well, they may say that they weren't closing the Rex Trail because of aesthetic value. They closed it for protection of public safety and public property. And with discretionary authority of a commissioner that, you know, at a whim, the Supreme Court has said, you know, well, they have that discretionary authority. What is considered safety issue? What is considered damage to public property? You know, that's in the eyes of the beholder. And we cannot allow the commissioner to have that broad discretionary authority in this case. I mean, we're talking about general state land, not areas that have been set aside and protected, so that Alaskans can go out, hunt, fish, gather berries, do some gold mining, etc. You know, we have to determine, you know, if we're going to set a standard for damage, then, okay, you know, there's been a lot of talk around the table here about damage and what a 10,000-pound vehicle could cause. Well, you know, Okay, then what is the standard that you're going to set as damage? We do logging, we do mining around the state, and if you've been down the Rex Trail, you can go to Gold Mine Creek, or Gold King Creek, and the mining that's been involved there, they completely resurface the face of the earth, destroyed an entire valley, yet DNR closes a trail because of a few ruts. Closing a trail down to long-term Alaskans who have used that trails for years because they sold property to locals out there who now didn't like the added pressure that they were seeing around their little private little strip of land that they have, because there was a large population of moose. You know, when you have Alaskans, more Alaskans went out there to feed their families, it's added pressure on the trail, and they didn't like it. And so they complained. And even the gold miner who was there at Gold King complained as well about all these added ruts on the trail, and it was, you know, from the increased pressure. So, you know, so they used the generally allowed uses as a stepping stone to say, you know, people seeing when they changed the generally allowed uses, and that's another thing I would like to point out, is that DNR changed the generally allowed uses in 2002 without a single public notice that they were adding a weight restriction to an all definition of an ATV. And you were looking at the 10,000 pound listed here. That was put in there because in the general allowed uses, it already says that a highway vehicle up to 10,000 pounds can use state land. Well, what's the difference between a 10,000 pound highway vehicle and an 8,000 pound, you know, modified Jeep that maybe doesn't have a license plate on it? I don't think a license plate decreases the vehicle's weight, or, you know, just because the vehicle is registered doesn't mean it's not going to create some damage. And we have to accept a certain amount of damage to the terrain. We can't walk on the land out there without damaging something. We're going to create tracks and trails no matter what. But we have to determine an acceptable amount of damage. And is it permanent damage? You know, the Rex Trail, as I said, I've been going down the trail for years. I've got a track rig that exerts less ground pressure than you do standing, and I safely go down the trail without any problem. And so, but you know, I've seen the moose buggies that used to go down there, and those guys, you know, now today have, because of the restriction, and there's fewer and fewer people out there, the trail it's going to grow back. If you quit using a trail, Mother Nature will take it back over. The only way to sustain a trail is to use the trail. If you close it down, eventually Mother Nature will grow back over top of it, and the trail will disappear. So, you know, in reality, I don't even think we would consider permanent damage on a trail system. Creating a rut, yeah, it looks ugly, it looks terrible, potentially, but, you know, is it permanent damage? No. Is mining permanent damage? You know, you watch some of the shows, you see a lot of damage, in my eye, what they do to the terrain out there. But after they're done mining, I guess in 30, 40 years, it's going to grow back. Maybe you may see it, you may tell that they were there, you may not. Mother Nature is extremely good at recovering itself. And I would like to, I guess, address the other question that came up about...
Mr. Grove, we're well beyond our three-minute time limit, so if you could be kind of brief and get wrapped up.
Sure. All right. Well, I'm just going to address the one part about where the commissioner must offer a reasonable alternative. We don't need to, and we don't expect the commissioner to develop trails around a safety hazard. If you want to close a section of a trail because you think it's unsafe, okay, close that portion. The public will make a route around it. We don't need the state to develop a trail or create another trail. the public, these trails were created by public resources, not by state resources or by private resources, I should say. So I don't expect, never would expect the state to create trails. If there's a reason for us to get to a certain area on state land, the private citizens will create the trail. If you give us the access and the ability to do that. And again, the 10,000 pound is already in general allowed uses for a registered vehicle. It makes no sense that we should just restrict an ATV to 1,500 pounds because it just gives somebody that with give them something to complain about. So I'll be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Any questions? Representative Seaton.
Thank you. The deputy commissioners testified that the only time they're using aesthetic values to make a closure is in state parks. So are you thinking that this would be dealing with state park land? Is that the or are we thinking that the definition of public safety would be challenged and the closures would be said for other closures outside of parks would be for aesthetic values? I mean, otherwise I don't see how this bill applies to the Rex Trail or pretty much anything else other than state parks if the only places they apply that standard is within state parks.
I don't see this bill applying to state parks. Those state parks are set aside by the legislature and are protected because of that. This bill relates only to general state land, which we own, you know, very little of across the state. And hopefully, I mean, I heard his testimony that this would not, you know, change what happened on the Rex Trail, but in Section 1, one of the reasons we put in there that notwithstanding any other provisions of law, I would hope that the legislature would make sure that DNR is not closing down a trail simply for discretionary protection of what they consider damage to public property or public safety, and what do they consider a safety hazard, and that this bill would apply, or the statute would then apply, and whatever, you know, make it extremely hard for DNR to be closing down any trails. So, you know, whether or not this is going to have that effect, I guess we'll find out in another lawsuit if needed. If we cannot get DNR to change the current management scheme that they have been doing over the last decade and restricting Alaskans to a valuable resource out on the Rex.
Thank you, Mr. Grove. We have one more question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I didn't have a question until the very end there. Mr. Grove, Andy Josephson, my question for you, I see that you were one of the class that sued the state. Is it your view that the findings that the trial court made and the Supreme Court affirmed about the damage, safety considerations, and that sort of thing was just pretextual? That is, was it just phony? Is it your position that this was all just a ruse and that it was really just an aesthetics concern?
Through the chair. Yes, sir, it really was. There was never an actual report of any damage, any vehicles per se. There was never any accidents reported from anybody ever getting hurt on the Rex Trail. It was a ruse. And yes, the trail seen significant use, but to say that there was public damage that was just somehow permanent, that would never, you know, we could never heal from, was a total ruse, sadly a mistake, I think, from DNR to go down that route, because where does it stop? I mean, you can take a picture of a 4-foot rut or anything and say there was that was damage or that's a safety concern now. But, you know, where does it stop? I mean, the next commissioner might say it might be a 1-foot rut. You know, we have skiers skiing off of mountaintops and Valdez. You know, I would consider that a serious safety concern. But if individuals want to do that, go for it. But when we're going to start, we need to define what is a safety issue and what is damage. And for the sake of me, I cannot see where they could legitimately consider the Rex Trail permanently damaged or damaged to the point that it's going to harm the state or Alaska. The only thing it did was it limited access to others. They had to move to a different area, put pressure in other areas, and it gave those that live along the trail more freedom, less pressure in their backyard. Sadly, I mean, I could sit here, I could support DNR, I could pay them the $100 fee that they currently charge me if I want to go down the Rex Trail as a rubber track rig vehicle. By the way, though, if I agree to pay for that permit, then they want to say I can't go any farther than 100 feet from the trail, as though, you know, they're protecting then the area of the thousands of square miles alongside the trail that are open to motorized access. I can't use that area. And, you know, they gave me a criminal citation for trespass because I was off of the trail more than 100 feet 2 years ago. I fought it, and I've been fighting these guys for years, and but sadly, you know, I could be going along with DNR and hunting out there with a lot less pressure. There's a lot less other guys out there. It's more, my success rate has been a lot better. But, you know, what kind of person would that make me if I'm just out for myself? And, so, we need to fix this issue, and DNR has needed the reins to be pulled on them. And whether this, I hope that you guys, if this doesn't fix it, maybe we need to make it stronger. And anyway,
thank you, Mr. Grobe. There. Thank you. We appreciate your testimony, and we'll stay at the Mat-Su LIO. Robert Kaywood, Mr. Kaywood, could you give us your name for the record and a 3-minute testimony, please?
Well, I'm Robert Kaywood. I'm from Chugiak. I was one of the guys originally sued on the Rex Trail. I've been hunting for 35 years all over Alaska on foot. Snow machines, swamp buggies, Argos. I went down the Rex Trail the first time about 30 years ago in an Argo, and you couldn't hardly get down it. So the trail really never changed. But when they changed the state's allowable uses in 2002, that basically made tens of thousands of Alaskans illegally going out and getting their moose meat or fishing or whatever else they're out doing. And I was hoping that this bill was going to change that back to what it was before. Basically, it got changed illegally, I think. That's about it.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Josephson.
Yes. Mr. Kaywood, do you still have a business where you lease these large recreational vehicles?
I never did.
Yes,
please.
Thank you. You were not an owner of CMM, General Contractors?
I am.
And... Man, mm-hmm. Didn't they lease snowcats and fully tracked vehicles?
Oh, I have some snowcats for sale, but they're not used for moose hunting. They're working machines. You can pull 30,000 pounds with them. They're way over 10,000 pounds.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Kaywood. We appreciate it. And if we could go off net now to Patty Barber. If you could please give us your name and affiliation for the record in 3 minutes of testimony.
Yes, my name is Patty Barber, living in Palmer, support HB 213. I would like to see a first-person history of anyone having an accident with personal injury on the Rex Trail caused by a large vehicle rut. The large vehicles are the traditional used vehicle for the Rex Trail and other similar trails within the state. If a permit is needed to access these trails, then I suggest that the state readopt the use of an occasional use license plate. I also support the PSI rating on trails. Even a bicycle and the human foot creates a deep rut. Are we going to have these use be permitted? Thank you for allowing me to testify on this important bill.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Barber? Thank you very much for your testimony, and we'll stay off net with Kenny Barber.
My name is Kenny Barber. I live at Dubuque. I'd like to just say that, you know, I support this the way it's written pretty much. I spent a lot of time in a swamp buggy hunting and trapping out of one for almost 40 years. And I'd like to bring up one thing. What Warren Olson touched on about the PSIs, there's a big difference between the way the rubber tires are made for them rigs. Mine, the old days, I used to have to use airplane tires and chains. It made a difference. You tore up a lot of country going through. But then they came out with farm implement tires and all that stuff for your buggies and to run it on your buggies. And it makes a big difference. You can, where I went across the swamp, you could definitely tell. But when guys that went across the swamp with them farm implement tires and the bigger tires, they went across and you couldn't hardly see where they went. And as far as like under 10,000 pounds, like the trucks that are licensed, anybody can go out there and rip up a trail. I don't care if you're on a three wheeler or a bicycle, you can still rip up a trail. So, you know, that has to be, I've said this in front of a bunch of people in meetings before, that if you're going to do this, create an area to go out and do just what they want to do. Let them go out there and rip and tear and raise hell. That's fine. But pick an area where you're not going to hurt the habitat or any other forms of land issues. And the other thing I'd like to get straight, I listened to somebody bring up about salmon streams having a problem. Well, you know, I trapped the Kinnick River. It's probably one of the most used places in the whole state as far as off-road use. I trapped that river for 41 years, crossed in the same spot in these creeks, and the salmon still spawn in the same spot that I crossed. And I'm not the only guy who crossed it. There's probably, I don't know, I'd say probably a good couple hundred people in a month crossing that thing or more, probably, going across that salmon spawning stream. I think the thing that really concerns salmon spawning as far as crossing is people riding up and down the creek going parallel in the creek. That's what hurts it. It's not the crossing of the creek. So I just like to bring that to your attention, that 41 years of crossing the same spot and the salmon still spawn in the same place. I mean, I don't see where it's hurting anything. So that's just my opinion. So anyway, that's all I got to say.
Any questions for Mr. Barber? Mr. Barber, thank you very much for calling in today. We appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
And now we'll go to Andrew Zajac. If you're there, please give us your name for the record, your affiliation, and 3 minutes of testimony.
Yes, my name's Andrew Zajac. I live in Eagle River, and I am representing myself. I have lived in the state of Alaska since 1969, and have enjoyed being here. But one of the things that I notice that we are constantly getting more and more restrictions, whether it's state land, federal lands, or private lands. And I cannot add to the testimony of the previous speakers, Mr. Olson, Mr. Grove, Mr. Kaywood, and the Barbers, but I would just simply like to say that I am supporting the bill, 213, and I feel that the trails need to be opened. The value of the land is not necessarily in the blueberries and the miniature birches. The value of the land in many of these places is simply an access route. And so I am encouraging you to support the bill. And that is basically all I have to say.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Zajac? Thank you very much for your testimony today, Mr. Zajac. We appreciate it.
Thank you for the opportunity.
And if we could go to Randy, I'm going to say Jorgen, but maybe you can correct me on that. I apologize for mispronouncing that. If you could give me your name for the record and 3 minutes of testimony, please.
Yes, it's Randy Bjorgen, and I'm live in Anchorage. I'm speaking on behalf of my wife and my son. When we first got up here in the 1980s, we were able to go just about anywhere we wanted to go, and we were young enough to do it any method we wanted to, and usually by foot. Now, unfortunately, I'm getting a little older and falling apart, so I have to rely a little bit on mechanical means of getting some places where I used to be able to walk for 10, 15 miles. But now I can't do that anymore, and it's getting very bad now when access to areas where we want to recreate, hunt or fish, or just go out and pick some berries or enjoy Alaska wildlife, we're being restricted more and more by government agencies that just on their personal whims want to close and restrict areas and access routes. And I think this needs to stop, and I think this House bill will be a good step in making that happen. And I think we saw a little bit because of the Sturgeon decision that government overreach has gone a step too far, and I think this bill will help to stop some of that within this state. And if we don't want to support this bill, then we're basically saying that us Alaskans should have no access to the lands we've enjoyed over the years. And that's my testimony.
Any questions? Thank you, Mr. Bjorgen, for your testimony. We appreciate you calling in today.
Thank you.
And do I have anyone in the room that would like to testify? Do we have anyone here? Seeing, I don't believe we have anyone else online. So we will close public testimony and go to committee comments. Any comments from the committee? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When Mr. Fogles comes back, I'd like him to address the issue that was brought in testimony that the people that are supporting this believe that page 1, line 9, notwithstanding any other provision of law, means that this definition would be applied not just in state parks, but would be applied to prevent DNR from closing any trail. And that was the testimony that was offered. And so I'd like to get that addressed by Mr. Fogles when he has a chance.
Okay. Deputy Commissioner, are you still with us?
Mr. Chairman, yes, I am. Representative Seaton, I guess... I'm just reading the bill. It basically says restricted or prohibited for the purpose of protecting aesthetic values of the land. So, this is, within Title 38, so it doesn't, our read is that it should not affect our ability to manage state parks. But again, it's just focused on cases where DNR would choose to try and restrict access to protect aesthetic values. So, that's just in the bill. I'm reading from the bill.
Mr. Chairman.
Follow up?
I may be asking two things at once. Got confusing. The testimony was that on line 9 on page 1, notwithstanding any other provision of law, the person testifying to this particular draft said that the purpose was so the DNR would not be able to close down other trails, not talking about state parks, but other trails, and for public safety reasons is what he said. And I'm just wondering, I just want to get DNR's on the record saying that they think that notwithstanding any other provisional law, does or does not extend the usage of this to public safety?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, our interpretation at this point is that it does not extend this to public safety. It's strictly referring to protecting the aesthetic values. You know, we don't have a formal AG's opinion on this. You know, we've just had brief conversations with some of our attorneys, but that's our interpretation so far.
Could I follow up on that?
Representative Seaton, do you have a follow-up?
No, that's fine.
Okay, thank you. Representative Josephson.
Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Fogles, you said that on the subject of the aesthetic value caveat, that that parks wouldn't be implicated. I'm not sure where I see that for sure. I mean, clearly we're not tearing up the park statute. I get that, but there are other land designations besides parks, right? I mean, there's things like the Cane's Head Recreation Area, and there was the dispute. I'm trying to remember the name of the area over by Gustavus, when the previous administration wanted to change the way in which we regulate and manage other designated areas. I'm trying to remember what those are called. I can't
public remember. Use areas potentially.
Yeah, there's another designate. There are other designations like Round Island that are not parks per se. And I'm just wondering. I guess my question is, Mr. Fogles, have you had the Attorney General's office look at this?
Representative Josephson, through the chair, not in great detail. We've had some discussions with the Attorney General's office. We have not had a chance to have them really tuck into this in as much detail as we probably need to. But and it may be that this committee would like someone from the Department of Law to be available at a future hearing. But I mean, our parks are created under different statutes, and this is all within our Title 38 statute, and so it would apply to, in our view, pretty much to Title 38 lands, and parks have their own statutes that talk about how they manage and regulate access.
And Mr. Fogles, maybe you can clarify that for me, because my assumption is that legislatively designated land actually isn't only covered under other statutes, but has their own set-aside management plans, which actually supersede anything else that would be in statute, since they're designated that way. Am I somewhat correct?
Mr. Chairman, yeah, that's our interpretation. I mean, all our state park units are created by their own statutes and have their own management direction within the statute.
Thank you. Representative Seaton.
And Mr. Chairman, the reason I brought up state parks was because I asked the question about where do we do management or closing trails for aesthetic values, and the Ed Fogle said that the only place they do that is in state parks. So if this is not done outside of state parks, then I'm trying to figure out what the nexus of the bill is to these trails. We had testimony that it was interpreted by some people that page 1, line 9, that notwithstanding any other provision of law, was meant to extend this to trails, you know, across the state. And so I just need to really get some definition from the department as to the full parameters. So thank you.
Any further questions? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And next time, what would be helpful also, a couple of the testifiers talked about, okay, there weren't any injuries, but I'm just wondering from a management perspective, I think you want to be more conservative. You want to actually prevent the injury from happening, because had someone been hurt, then, you know, if it could be proved it was because of improper management, that person could sue the state, you know, for whatever, if you broke your leg or, you know, something like that. So when you're considering public safety concerns, wouldn't you err on the side of, you know, doing something before an injury occurred?
Representative Tarr, through the chair, I mean, ideally, I mean, if we see a situation developing that we think that would be a serious safety concern to the public, we would, if we were responsible. We would try and address that situation before an accident happened. Yeah, I would agree with that. That's sometimes easier said than done, though. You know, as a professional land manager, you can't always second-guess that.
And a brief
follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Because having not read all the court documents, I'm just thinking, you know, those actions were found to be proper and that the courts, you know, I guess would have thought the same thing, that, you know, you could substantiate that there was enough damage that it was a safety concern, and it wasn't, you know, they didn't say, well, you know, no one's been hurt yet, so that was an improper action. I mean, they actually supported the action of the department. So that's what I'm thinking, you know, we need to be as preventative as possible, you know, knowing that, as you stated, that that always can't happen.
Representative Josephson.
Thank you. Deputy Commissioner, I'm curious about your testimony. You've said that the department's not particularly concerned because the caveat on all of this is the aesthetic issue. And I see under AS3805035, powers and duties of the Director of Lands, and 4437020, duties of the department with respect to natural resources, that clearly the legislature has a role in all this. But this says, this bill says, in the future, if DNR wants a designation based on aesthetics, the legislature must sign off. And currently, that's not the law. Are you okay with relinquishing that power?
Representative Josephson, through the chair, you know, again, I mean, that's a difficult question to answer. I mean, it's just something we don't have any experience with. We really haven't managed general state land for aesthetic values. And that's not what we do typically on general state land. So, you know, I think there's a pathway here. If we were to want to do that in the future, then if this bill were to pass, it still allows us to have a management pathway to do that.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you. Mr. Fuller, was this Representative Johnson? Doesn't all your power flow from the legislature?
Representative Johnson, through the chair, yes, sir.
And the Constitution, so through statute and law. So, you know, I would anticipate that your department would be comfortable with the laws that we send you.
Representative Johnson, through the chair, yes, they're laws, and we have to abide by them at that point.
Thank you, and I expected that answer, Ed. Thank you.
Representative Joseph.
Thank you. Deputy Commissioner, I read the Kaywood decision as thoroughly as any case I've ever read, and your department put a tremendous amount of time into studying the Rex Trail issue, preparing a report, doing long-term studies, sending men and women into the field, taking complaints, defending this in trial court, defending it before the Supreme Court. Are you proud of your department, Deputy Commissioner?
Representative Josephson, through the chair, I'm always proud of our department. It's a great department. The Rex Trail has been a very difficult issue for a long time now. For at least four commissioners have grappled with the Rex Trail. And we see that it's a problem. We see that there are a huge number of people out there that are very upset with the way the department has managed that trail. And we've done our best to try and work through it. We've gotten money to do some work to get some information on what the damage is and what types of uses cause more damage or less damage. We've gotten a lot of money to try and fix parts of that trail. As a matter of fact, I just found out today that we got approved for Pittman Roberts funds to start working on fixing another section of the trail. And we actually $720,000 worth of Pittman Roberts funds that we can leverage with some capital funds that we already have. So we'll start this summer working on fixing portions of that trail so that it can see heavier use and start reestablishing it. And we're working this problem. It's a problem, and the solutions so far have not been perfect for everyone.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the summary of changes, they're talking about must be over 648 contiguous acres or less and may not be in effect for more than 3 years, nor cumulative over that period of time more than 8 months. And then it's must be deemed necessary for public safety purposes. So the conditions under which a determination is made, by adding the word it must be necessary for public safety and public or private property, since it's the protection of public safety and public or private property, it seems to be correct that this limitation is now not only that it is for the protection of public safety and public or private property, but it's deemed necessary to do that. Does that restriction that you must prove that this action is necessary for that change the determinations or the way you would move forward in your findings?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, I guess, when I read that, I wasn't really sure that the addition there is the word necessary. It seemed like, the way the statute was originally written, we would still have to show that it was, necessary. I don't know. You'd have to talk to someone from the Department of Law, perhaps, but, I would have interpreted that to, in our finding, to have to address the protection of public safety and public or private property regardless of this change.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Mr. Fogles, I appreciate your patience with us today and hanging in there with us. That's good. I'd like to make just a few comments and take the liberty of being the chair. I've got a feeling I'm probably the only person who's been on the Rex Trail more than 24 times. It's not far from my home, actually. And, Rex Trail conditions, it's interesting when people talk about conditions, because I've driven to an area called Two Rivers with a two-wheel drive Ford pickup that had positive traction rear end, dependent upon the weather and the conditions of the summer. Because sometimes it's dusty and sometimes it's muddy. But I'm always somewhat concerned when we start talking about a determination by someone in an administration that's going to make a safety determination, because are we going to close the Iditarod 1 year? Are we going to close Iron Dog? Mm-hmm. What about Arctic Man? We almost traditionally, I hate to say it, almost traditionally as Alaskans, we kind of like the edge to some degree. If we didn't, those things wouldn't exist. That's for sure. And my opinion, of course, is those are great things. I think they're absolutely marvelous things. So I think there's some things to be done here, and I will certainly stay connected with the sponsor. It sounded like that we might need a little deeper legal opinion on what we have. So I'm planning on holding this, and we'll get that and get this back before us. So at this point in time, is there anything else before the committee? Any questions? Representative Seaton?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I've never been on the Rex Trail. And, that's, to me, this is only simply an example, but this is a law of statewide application of all state land. And so I'm not sure whether we are only talking about 2477 trails. I have some down in on the Lower Kenai Peninsula that have access or don't have access. But I'm trying to get a clearer handle on what the application of this and the change to, 10,000-pound vehicles everywhere. Is that what we're really talking about? And I don't know. So that's that's my concern. I'm, you know, the people that are talking about the Rex Trail.
Sure.
The only reason I'm talking about that is because we were given in the back of documents specific legal. So I appreciate the sponsor bringing it forward. I'm trying to look at the applications, you know, across the rest of the state. So but I appreciate your detailed information and, you know, weights and all those kind of things. I don't know. But the one thing that I didn't hear, I heard a number of people in testimony coming forward and saying that we should be managing these trails with a PSI restriction, mm-hmm. pound for square inch on the surface of, but I haven't heard the suggestion of what that should be. And I think that if possibly what we're trying to do is get protection of our public lands as well as access, maybe the sponsor might want to talk to other folks as well and the committee and say, is that something that would give us a clear definition of what makes sense to be allowed and give people greater access throughout Alaska without damaging habitat? So I appreciate the hearing and appreciate everything.
And Representative Seaton, you know, that's probably subjective to the conditions of the trail, the material that you use. You know, some trails are actually go across ridge lines and they're solid gravel, probably harder than these asphalt roads right outside of this building. Others go through different, and they're all in different climate zones, and they're all at different elevations, and they're in different weather patterns, so it's not a real easy question to answer. I think the Rex Trail got involved here because, through no one's fault, it was a very emotional issue to deal with. I happened to be a municipal official at the time that some of these things came down in the municipality. It happened, and it got very emotional, and unfortunately, sometimes, through no one's fault, both sides will get very emotional, and a lot of things will be said that probably weren't intended to be said. And I do remember quite specifically that even though the department did their best to hold their own, they probably went beyond what they felt their original finding was some of the things they stated in a public meeting. Mm-hmm. And fully aware that it was very emotional, and I would have defended myself as well. That was one of those rare public meetings where I got to be the guy in the middle instead of the guy on one side or the other. So I just watched the fracas go back and forth and back and forth. But it was very emotional, and the folks in that area take their outdoor recreation very seriously, as do the people that travel to that area so they can get in the outdoors. So there probably just wasn't an easy answer there, but I do appreciate the sponsor trying to work on something that maybe will get us to some resolve at some point.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I just wanted to, you know, thank the sponsor as well. And I think the part requiring the commissioner to, you know, communicate the findings could be very productive and make sure communication's increased and, you know, help that. So for me, it's understanding the vehicle limit and how, you know, the original version of the bill didn't have that language. So then, you know, the change and what that impact is. So I'll do my best to understand that and in short order and be ready to go.
Thank you. And I will say to the sponsor before we close, what I do appreciate is the written findings and the notice, because I can't think of anyone that likes a decision to suddenly appear. Mm-hmm. And this, here's your new restriction, and there's not much reasoning behind it. And that, mm-hmm. you know, that's tough for everybody to swallow. So mm-hmm. I think that intent in there is certainly very admirable. So I've talked enough for today, and I do appreciate committee members showing up for what I think may have been the only meeting held
today.
Just go ahead.
That's Good Friday.
Thank you so much. Yeah, we'll hold the bill. We will have information for you. We will try and get that information gathered up and get this back on our agenda as soon as possible. Representative Tilton.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. And we are happy and available to work with anybody to help answer any of their questions. And we appreciate the committee's taking this bill up today.
Thank you very much. With nothing else before us, we will adjourn at 2:30.